Today's episode of Hidden Forces is made possible by listeners like you. For more information about this week's episode or for easy access to related programming, visit our website at hiddenforces.io and subscribe to our free email list. If you want access to overtime segments, episode transcripts, and show rundowns full of links and detailed information related to each and every episode, check out our premium subscription available through the Hidden Forces website or through our Patreon page. And remember, if you listen to the show on your Apple Podcast app, you can give us a review. Each review helps more people find the show and join our amazing community. And with that, please enjoy this week's episode. What's up, everybody? I'm Dimitri Kafinas, and you're listening to Hidden Forces, where each week I speak with experts in the fields of technology, science, finance, and culture to help you gain the tools to better navigate an increasingly complex world so that you're less surprised by tomorrow and better able to predict what happens next. My episode this week is a continuation of our coverage of the electric car manufacturer Tesla and features an anonymous guest whose identity will remain hidden, but whose voice will be heard for the first time ever on this podcast. The focus of today's conversation is Tesla Q, a reference to the organizing hashtag used by a growing emergent network of investors, chemical engineers, airplane pilots, car mechanics, and just about any other career grouping you can imagine. What unites all of them is their outrage at, and in some cases, their speculation in Tesla, its practices, its statements, and its prospects as a car company and as a stock, which according to many members of this community, represents the short sale of the century. My interest in Tesla has grown organically, and my objective with these episodes is to chronicle, document, and expose through a series of conversations with journalists, short sellers, and critics, statements and practices that I believe conflict with the narrative of Tesla as a growth company operating at the cutting edge of technological innovation. Nothing I say on this episode can or should be viewed as financial advice. All opinions expressed by me and podcast guests are solely our own opinions. And as is the case with all of my episodes, these conversations are for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as the basis for financial decisions. One of the core missions of Hidden Forces is to bring high-quality conversations and thoughtful analysis to the most important issues of the day. Tesla sits at the intersection of so many of the forces that we have documented and explored on this program, and I believe that our coverage of this company, its practices, and its prospects will prove prescient in the months and years to come. And with that, let's get right into this week's episode. What's up, everybody? I have a very special episode in store for all of you today, and a very special guest to intro to you as well. But before I do that, I want to make very clear that all opinions expressed by me and podcast guests today are solely our opinions and should not be relied upon as the basis for financial decisions. This episode of Hidden Forces is for informational purposes only. Now, I'm going to intro my guest. I'm actually going to let him intro himself. And I'll also say that we're going to have a second guest who has come on the program before, also to talk about Tesla, to come on to this show halfway through, similar to how we did with Lawrence Fossey, a.k.a. Montana Skeptic, about a month and a half ago. So why don't you speak into the microphone?
Good afternoon, Dimitri. It's a great pleasure to be here. I am known as Tesla Charts. I run the Twitter account by that handle, and for the purposes of this podcast, you can call me TC.
TC. All right, TC. It's great having you on. The audience doesn't know this, but we tried to do this once before, and I tried to intro you, and it was a total disaster, and I just thought it'd be better if you would speak directly. So let's get right into this. First of all, for those people who do not know what Tesla Charts is, let's talk to those people first. What is Tesla Charts, and who is Tesla Charts?
So Tesla Charts is a Twitter account that I started a little over a year ago. And if you would have told me when I started this account a year ago that I'd be sitting here in New York talking to you on the Hidden Forces podcast, I wouldn't have believed it. the mission statement of the account is to unabashedly serve the confirmation bias of Tesla bears. And it was sort of a social media experiment on my part. I listened to, with great interest, to an episode of Hidden Forces that you did a few weeks ago with Cal Newport talking about the dangers of social media. I've done the exact opposite of all of his advice. I have decided to jump right in, swim in the dopamine, figure out the algo, and see if I couldn't take my passion, which is data visualization, and my current obsession, which is Tesla and the stock, and combine those two and make an impact on social media. And so I run Tesla Charts anonymously, which we can get into. Tesla Charts is one of many really, really great and brilliant Tesla Q accounts, which I'm sure we'll touch on as well. But I basically take complex financial data around Tesla and try to make great visuals. It's my passion. And my heart of hearts, I really love distill complexity into great visuals.
So we'll get into that, and we'll also get into Tesla Q, which is really the main subject of today's episode. Before we do that, give us a quick sense of who you are. We're not going to give your name out during this episode, and we'll talk about why that's important and the subject of anonymity within Tesla Q, but tell us a little bit about who you are.
So I'm a scientist by training, immigrated to the U.S. for graduate school. It's a great privilege to live in the U.S. I'm proud to be a citizen. I did a hard science. I did graduate work in one of the hard sciences, and then embarked on a multi-decade corporate career. Did quite well, but recently decided to chart my own path and to pursue my own personal passions. And Tesla Charts is just one of the outlets of my current passions. And so, by and large, I run my own business and pursue my own passion. I do a lot of private investing, angel investing, venture capital. Hear a lot of pitches, but mostly these days I just run Tesla Charts. I've been fortunate enough to achieve a certain level of economic freedom, and I intend on extracting all of the value that I can from that economic freedom because I know it's precious.
So you are the most visible member of Tesla Q that remains that I've come across. I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly from my perspective, and I'm not in it like everyone else is. Before you, it was really Montana Skeptic, or at least he became the...
Mark Spiegel,
of course, right. Actually, forget that. Let me take that
I'd
back.
I'd say he's probably higher profile. Yeah.
As Mark has a big mouth, as he says, and he uses it. So it's true. Actually, there are a number of huge personalities in the space. Mark definitely is the biggest one. I take that back. But you're definitely there. You're a prominent voice, and you have a lot of credibility. What role do you play in this community?
It's interesting. So the community is very dynamic. I would say that it's leaderless in the sense that it doesn't have a command and control.
Hydra.
It's very kinetic. People have come and gone. People have gotten over their skis in the trade and got stopped out of their shorts or gotten fed up with the name and moved on or have been doxxed and have decided to take their accounts down.
Which we'll talk about as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. My role is primarily data visualizer, but also because the vast majority of Tesla Q are anonymous, there's sort of an informal code of vouching for people. So if you get to know somebody and somebody else wants to talk to them, you can say, hey, you know, Spiegel says this person is okay, or Fossey says, you know, this account is cool, and you can direct message them without fear of being doxxed. And so there's a lot of that goes on as well amongst the sort of more prominent members of Tesla Q. And so directing traffic, policing each other, you know, making sure. And one of the beautiful things about Tesla Q is if I post something and it's wrong, or I have a typo, or I've misinterpreted the data, Tesla Q is the first to call me on it. And my DMs will light up, and I'll either delete the post or repost it or clarify it. And so everybody has that role as well. It's a self-correcting, crowdsourced, peer-reviewed, really the biggest experiment in financial Twitter crowdsourcing of our time.
So let's talk about this crowdsourcing phenomenon. We did an episode called actually Crowdsourcing and New Power in the 21st Century with Jeremy Hyman's and Henry Timms going back a while now. I think it was episode 48 or something like that. This is certainly enabled by technology, social media, Twitter specifically. It is a revolution in terms of how investors, activists, short sellers are researching and processing information about a company, right? In the past, you'd have people like Jim Chanos do a lot of proprietary research, and then they would share that with members of the media with whom they cultivated relationships, and they would use the media to try to get the message out to the public and try to put pressure on the stock, right? One of the things that's different about this is that, first of all, besides being a community, it's also not all short sellers, right?
Correct.
It seems that what unifies everyone, and this is a growing community, is their general contempt for Elon Musk, who they view as an abomination.
Yeah, so I phrase it slightly differently, and I agree conceptually. I think Tesla Q is the product of experts in their own particular field that Elon has waded into. And so I describe the phenomenon as the realization. And the realization happens when you know something inside out. Elon comes into your field, makes what I believe are knowingly outrageous and most likely false statements that you know in the moment are false. And then he ridicules you for not having thought of them. Mm-hmm. And once you've had that realization in any particular field, you can't look at him the same way after that. And so this is amazing polarity of opinion on him, which is either he is the Edison of our times, as we heard on
right.
CNBC just yesterday, or you think he's a charlatan and a carnival barker, which is the icon of my Twitter account, famously, that I've branded. And so you could see which side of the aisle I fall on. And for me, he came into a field that I knew a fair bit about, which was solar technology and solar shingle reveal in particular. And after I watched that reveal, I just couldn't let it go. I knew in the moment that the product was likely fake, and Fast Company has since reported that it was. This was back in October in 2016. And it's not really materialized as a commercial product. It was used to justify the SolarCity acquisition, which some would call a bailout. Ever since that moment, I remember the moment I was watching the reveal on YouTube and watching him hold what I thought was a fake product in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I could never look at him the same again. And so then when you dig further and further and further, everywhere you look, it's the same pattern. And so Tesla Q is really a bunch of experts from a variety of different fields. Artificial intelligence. I'm sure there's a new influx of boring tunnel engineers after the boring company reveal a few months ago.
Automotive manufacturers. I say mm-hmm. their contempt and that they view him as an abomination because of some specific tactics that he relies upon. I mean, he definitely bullies people.
100%.
I think we could agree about that. And I think that, first of all, I've said this before and I'll say it again, I'm not short the stock. I have no financial position in this company whatsoever. And when I began covering it, the first episode was with Charlie Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't come into it with any bias. I just knew that there were certain people that I respect that had a bearish view on the stock. But as I've looked deeper into it, what has been most upsetting for me has been the way that he has behaved. His behavior, I think, is the most revealing quality that traverses across disciplines, mm-hmm. right? And just a lot of really aberrant behavior. So, and that kind of brings me to another question, which, again, I feel like either we touched on directly or indirectly already, which is anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
So this emergent phenomenon, Tesla Q, which is this network of people who use the hashtag Tesla Q, $TeslaQ, which, as I understand, is a reference to the inevitable bankruptcy of the company, right? Because when you put a Q at the end of a
Correct.
Ticker, that's what you do when the company's bankrupt. The company is not bankrupt, to be clear. But so many people in this community are anonymous. I've put together this mosaic here in my rundown of Tesla Q accounts. I fully expect that there are going to be many people that are going to retweet and like this episode from Tesla Q. I will go through that tweet and I'll look to see who else I can add to this mosaic, and I'll be putting that in the rundown. But so many of these accounts are anonymous. People like Tesla is worth zero, who I think actually was recently suspended by Twitter.
Correct.
And we'll talk about that. Machine Planet, Investor Gator, Elon Says, El Gato Malo, Elmer Fudd, a really well-known account. So all these anonymous accounts of people doing incredible amounts of work. Why is that? Why are they anonymous?
So lots to unpack there. So the first thing I would say is successful, well-run, legitimate companies spend no time thinking about short sellers. And Elon spends an enormous amount of time thinking about short sellers, which is basically ringing the dinner bell for people who do this professionally. Now, I should say, I am short the stock, and like you, don't listen to my opinions as investment advice, but you should certainly hear my opinions through the prism of me being short the stock via put options and my personal bias on it. The reason most people prefer to stay anonymous is because Elon is, I think, quite vindictive and has bullied people and bullied whistleblowers, allegedly. There's credible allegations that we can get into of taking advantage of doxed information to call people's supervisors. Famously, Montana Skeptic was doxed by somebody. That information made its way to Elon, and Elon called his boss and threatened to sue if he didn't stop tweeting and writing on Seeking Alpha.
Well, he also shared that information with the media. I think a spokesperson for Tesla shared his employer's contact information.
Correct. There's a great account, Pac Watson, at Tesla Q. She is a former nurse, I believe, at Tesla, and tried to blow the whistle and allegedly credible allegations that somebody called Child Protective Services on her children and filed a complaint with the licensing board in the state that she works in California. Famously, Martin Tripp tried to blow the whistle and talking about defective batteries finding their way into Model 3 cars and had worked with Lynette Lopez, who's a reporter for Business Insider. Martin Tripp was allegedly swatted, is the term. So a false accusation of imminent threat to the Gigafactory was made against him, and the police went to his location. He has since at least temporarily left the country for fear of reprisal. So there's no good reason to be out there if you don't have to be. And it's a core First Amendment issue as long as you're...
So what was the impact on Tesla Q of the doxing of Montana Skeptic and the subsequent deleting of his account? He deleted his account, to be clear.
He did. I would say that that was the unifying moment where Tesla Q went from a loosely held group of people doing research sort of on the down low to highly motivated, twice as large, much more active, much more obsessed because of what happened to Montana Skeptic. So you have to understand the context. Montana Skeptic, Lawrence Fossey, spent as much time on Twitter policing Tesla Q and making sure people were polite and making sure people were factual. He spent as much time correcting Tesla Q and curbing the excesses of it. He spent as much time doing that as he did critiquing the company.
How would he do that?
He would call people out.
Just out on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Just on
and people
feed.
Respected him. So he was sort of the father of Tesla Q. Mm-hmm. Very well respected. He's a gentleman. He's a scholar. He's very thoughtful. He's very polite and was loved. I would say he was well loved. As much as you can love somebody behind an avatar that you don't know, you get to know people on Twitter.
His avatar was Galileo.
It was. And he famously spent as much time policing Tesla Q as he did critiquing the company. And when Elon went after him, the sort of tribal instincts, this whole social media experiment that I sort of alluded to earlier, I don't know hardly any of these people in real life. And for most of the accounts you named at the top, I would do anything for them. Because you've gotten to know them over the many months that we've been in this weird experiment together. And the famous example most recently of Elon's tactics, I think, and something I'm sure you want to discuss, which is this whole Skabushka affair.
Yeah, let's discuss that. So what is Skabushka?
So Skabushka is one of the iconic Tesla Q Twitter accounts, previously anonymous.
What was his profile picture?
It's a
like some weird
old piece
cadaver.
Of art, yeah.
it was like a skeleton. It looked correct. Like a 19th century picture of a cadaver that had rotted.
Yeah, I make art. I don't know it. But it was, yes, correct. And Skabushka came to become prominent in Tesla Q because of his ability to monitor production at Fremont. Apparently lives close to the plant and had gotten quite good at observing the plant and the comings and goings of the various trucks and cars coming out of production. And he got quite good at predicting what, for example, the Model 3 production would be as it was ramping or trying to ramp. And I think that got under Elon's skin. He had been doxxed probably 6 or 7 months ago. The thing about doxing is almost all reporters and the vast majority of good-thinking people would never use doxed information and would just ignore it. I knew that Skabushka was doxed. I had no idea what his name is because it's not for me. It's
his icky. Name is out now, right?
His name is out now, and we'll get to how that happened. It was out then, but it's famous now. Mm-hmm. Most recently, Skabushka happened upon Tesla, a Model 3, on autopilot / full self-driving in the Fremont area, getting ready for this Autonomy Day, Investor
right.
Day.
So Autonomy Investor Day was April 17th?
Something like that, 24th.
Okay,
maybe?
It was even sooner. And that was, tell our audience, for those who don't know what that is, give them a quick summary of what Autonomy Day was.
Autonomy Day was a 4 or 5 hour, Elon famously joked on Twitter, I think 4 hours and 20 minutes.
He's very specific.
Very specific.
He loves being specific.
Well, 420 is,
yeah,
is
also,
sort of
yeah,
go-to
no,
joke
for, sure,
for him.
Yeah.
Autonomy Day was the big reveal that Tesla is ostensibly leading in autonomous driving and, you know, full self-driving level 4/5 is just around the corner and everybody should buy it. And in fact, if you'd be financially insane, to quote Elon, to not buy a Model 3 today because it will appreciate in value once it gets software upgraded to a robo-taxi. Skabushka filmed part of that, and I don't know. I just read what he posted on Twitter. I get the sense that, like many of the investors who then took a ride on Autonomy Day in these ostensibly full self-driving cars. He has on film the car driving too fast and maybe a disengagement and things like that.
So what was the accusation he was making?
Elon or Skabushka?
No, Skabushka.
Skabushka was basically trying to document that, contrary to the claims that were going to be made at the Autonomy Day, Tesla's full self-driving capabilities are in fact lagging the industry by a wide margin. And I think that really annoyed people at Tesla. And the accusation—
Just to be clear, how was he going to do that? What was his following the Model 3 car? How did that prove that?
I don't know, because it's now tied up in a legal battle.
I see.
Because very shortly after Skabushka tweeted a very thoughtful thread on his encounter with this car and what he believed it meant for where Tesla's technology was in the spectrum of full self-driving capabilities, because, you know, there's billions and billions of dollars and dozens of companies racing to get to be the first to level 5 full autonomy, which most experts in the field would say is still at least a decade away. And requires technology.
And regulation. Irrespective of the technological hurdles, it's completely irresponsible to claim that you're going to be able to operate your car as a taxi in a year when there are forces that are outside of your control that have to deal with making that legal.
So I would say one of the phrases I coined, and maybe somebody else said it, but is the biggest barrier to full autonomy is partial autonomy. Because people will become comfortable with a system they shouldn't be. So it's just good enough to sort of dull your senses, and then an accident happens. But back to Skabushka, shortly after he filmed that car, Tesla filed an ex parte temporary restraining order against him and made outlandish claims, I believe, false claims, I believe, against him. And this really triggered the Tesla Q community. So if Montana Skeptic unified the Tesla Q community, brought things to the next level, the Skabushka affair has outraged the Tesla Q community. And as a consequence of that, Lawrence Fossey, Montana Skeptic, in sort of a... Who's a lawyer, in a very ironic, full circle, wonderful gesture on his part, launched and is leading a GoFundMe campaign to support Skabushka in his upcoming legal battle against Tesla. And that has raised $115,000, I believe, thereabouts, as we sit here today, and raised it very quickly. And I could tell you that there's several hundred thousand dollars more in reserve if he needs it. And just last night, as we're recording this, Skabushka's attorneys filed for a delay in the hearing so that they could proceed with discovery.
Let me ask you just to clarify something, because this is an issue I run into every time I do an episode, which is I don't know this community or the news around this company anywhere nearly as well as my guests.
Sure.
So he tweeted out a thread on Twitter that described some compromising information about the trial run that the Model 3 was taking before this Autonomy Day event. And subsequently, is it true that Elon and Tesla did not play any video that they had planned to play? Was that sort of the accusation?
I don't know what they planned to play. I know that they didn't play a video from the route that Skabushka was on,
which they were filming.
And most outrageously in the temporary restraining order is that Tesla accuses Skabushka basically of trying to ram the car, of interfering with the demo itself, to the point where you have swarms of people on Twitter accusing this guy, I'd say libeling this guy, of vehicular homicide, attempted vehicular homicide. And apparently, from people who have spoken with him, he completely denies that. And I believe him, because there's a track record on one side and there's a track record on the other. And from what I know of Skabushka, that doesn't sound like him whatsoever. But the truth will come out, because... You know.
Didn't they also accuse him of assaulting a security guard at the Tesla factory?
That was many months ago. There was, you know, for...
But it's part of the same lawsuit?
It's part of the same temporary restraining order application. Which you can get without representation. It was ex parte. Only one party was there. They fill out a form. Apparently, from what I hear, 99% of these get approved. It's a real smear on his record if the allegations aren't true. And for sure, one of the things that happened with the publication of this temporary restraining order is his personal information and his address was leaked to the public. And Elon then tweeted Volkswagen about it, and sort of for a different reason, which we probably don't need to get into, but that elevated to his 24 million followers or 25 million followers on Twitter that this information, this personal and compromising information about Skabushka exists. There are reports in Skabushka's reply that an army of people are calling his school. He's a student.
He's a 32-year-old PhD student out of Michigan.
He's studying at the University of Michigan.
Right.
Apparently in linguistics. These are all things I didn't really know until this whole affair, even though I've known him from Twitter for the better part of the last year. There are accounts, and in his response, which I read with great interest last night, that there are many, many people calling the school and demanding that he be expelled. Mm-hmm. And that he not be allowed to finish his PhD.
Yeah, there you go. There's the bullying for you.
There's the bullying, and that's why most people are anonymous. It's not worth it. I have children.
Right.
I'm not actually afraid of Elon Musk. I have the resources to defend myself, and I actually don't think that he would waste his time on me.
Well, has he ever contacted you?
He tweeted at me once on Twitter, quite mm-hmm. famously, on Father's Day, asking me how big my short position was.
Why on Father's curious. Day?
I don't know why he tweeted at me on Father's Day, but I remember it was Father's Day because I was at a friend's barbecue and my phone exploded. It's not even
good. Wow, that's really cool. What was that like getting a tweet from Elon Musk?
It was amazing. I stunned.
Can you describe the emotions?
Yeah, so I could tell you the exact story. I was at a Father's Day barbecue with some of my close friends, and I had been on the account for a few months. And what happened was, what triggered him was, I believe, I did a long thread on SolarCity, 25 parts. Because a judge's ruling had come out that allowed you to reconstruct what really happened, and it didn't look good.
What really happened when he purchased SolarCity?
When he bailed out SolarCity, yeah. Is the phrase I would use. He would say it was an acquisition based on amazing growth synergies that have famously not materialized.
The accusations that he used the health of Tesla's balance sheet to impair Tesla in order to save SolarCity,
Let me correct you. He used Tesla's ready access to the capital markets because mm-hmm. Tesla's balance sheet wasn't healthy even back then, and the acquisition of SolarCity made it much worse. But it goes even deeper than that. Most people don't know at the time that he acquired SolarCity using Tesla equity, SpaceX owned $200 million of SolarCity debt. Elon and his cousins owned $100 million between them of SolarCity debt, 65 to Elon, I believe, and 17.5 to each of his cousins. So if SolarCity had gone down, and it was really in a liquidity crisis, and many people were short the stock and thought it was a zero, famously, I think Jim Chanos was short the stock. This was all before my time on Tesla Q. But I've since reconstructed the history of it. If SolarCity had gone down, the whole thing would have gone down mm-hmm. because SpaceX was deep in it. Elon was personally in it. It would have sort of pierced the bubble of confidence in his ability to raise.
Yeah.
And so he used Tesla's access to the equity markets to basically coalesce his empire and pull SolarCity under the umbrella of Tesla. And since that closed, sort of fourth quarter 2016, SolarCity's installations are down something like 80 mm-hmm. or 85%. They've let go copious amounts of staff. You know, they still have this solar shingle hanging out there as ramping sometime in 2019. They have this factory in Buffalo that Montana Skeptic has written a couple of dozen really seminal articles on Seeking Alpha that I think when this is all done will be viewed quite favorably for their mm-hmm. their prescience. But that's basically how I came into this story. You know, you held up this solar shingle after the SolarCity acquisition.
But you were saying it was Father's Day, you were at a barbecue, mm-hmm. and your phone starts blowing up. So is it qualitatively different to get a tweet from Elon Musk in terms of the swarm that occurs on your phone?
Correct. So I was at Father's Day barbecue, and what happened was Zero Hedge posted my 25-part thread as a story, mm-hmm. which was huge for me. I was a nobody on Twitter, and then mm-hmm. Zero Hedge posted that SolarCity thread, and I kind of got it the next wave of followers and engagement and bots and bulls attacking me and all of this other stuff. And so it was about a day and a half after that, and he went out on Twitter and found my pinned tweet, which is what I said earlier, which is, I unabashedly serve the confirmation bias of Tesla bears. And he asked me, how big is your short position? So, you know, on the Twitter app, if you have the notifications on, 20 plus is like where it ends. And I pulled up my phone, I checked the weather. I had like 10 or 12 notifications, cleared them out, put it back on my phone. My phone started buzzing. It was literally a minute later, I pulled it out, it was 20 plus. So that's weird.
That's interesting.
And then I looked and I was like, oh my God, like Elon Musk just tweeted at me.
Oh man.
So he asked me how big my short position was, just curious. I tried to have a very polite exchange with him to try to keep him informed. I caught a lot of crap from Tesla Q for not being a little more robust with him in my responses. But very shortly after that, like a minute or two after that, he went on to Fred Lamberts, who's the editor of Electric, which is sort of one of the fan sites of Tesla, and promised the short burn of the century was coming. And this is really what drew the Dooner bell. So I feel like the SolarCity thread and his interaction with me led immediately to him promising to burn all the shorts, the short burn of the century. And that really rang the dinner bell for all the short sellers that are in here now.
So I actually knew about this thread, even though I asked you as though I didn't. And I have the thread in my rundown. And he said, how big is your short position? Just curious. And you said, it's modest, mostly an experiment in social media. Thanks for asking, though. Experiment in social media, I assume, is what you referred to earlier.
Correct.
And then he said, then you'll be fine. And you said, you're winning, bro. Why swing down to my level?
So remember, at that time, the stock price was about $370 a share. And
no,
was on the ascent.
Though.
Like, he was winning.
That's the thing,
why
though,
did he need to punch down
to
me?
You made this point earlier, and let's make it again.
Yeah.
If you're running a successful company, how and why would you be spending so much time concerned about and doxing people that are either short your company or spreading negative information about it?
Correct.
Even if you don't believe that information, even if it's totally not credible.
Let's put things into context. I had probably 4,500 or 5,000 followers at that time. When he doxed Montana, I think he had 4,200 followers. Mm-hmm. Elon has, at that time, 22 million followers. I mean, this guy gains and loses more followers in a minute than I had accumulated over the 4 or 5 months I'd been running the account. I can't get on CNBC. I can't get, you know, a tweet from Elon moves the stock. Clearly, as we
Although that's starting to change.
Correct.
That's starting to change, which is another phenomenon that I'd like to discuss 100%. With you.
But at that time, what, you know, I honestly believe, and I can't know, I don't know what goes on in his head, and I think that the SolarCity thread made Zero Hedge, which gave it a ton of engagement, which caught the eye of whoever monitors social media for Tesla and feeds Elon with his obsession of Tesla Q and burning the shorts. And then he went looking for me. And then he said short burn of the century later on and things like that. I think there's another quote too where after I said, why are you punching down to my level? He said something to the effect of, I don't want anyone to lose money and I'll give them fair warning if they do.
Yeah, he exactly said, I don't want anyone to lose their money or I will at least provide fair warning before it happens as I have done in the past.
Can you imagine a CEO of a $60 billion
company?
Well,
our president does this.
True.
Irrespective of your politics, I don't talk politics on the show. Mm-hmm. I have plenty of issues with all politicians. There's no denying the fact that the president of the United States does this and bullies people on Twitter. And this brings us to another point, all right, which is something I'd really like to discuss. So we talked about doxing. There's something else, which is account suspensions. Mm-hmm. So there are people within this community who have had their accounts suspended. I've discussed this not in terms of Tesla Q, but in terms of this larger policing of free speech on platforms by these Silicon Valley social media companies. Twitter is the least egregious offender. You know, there are much even worse ones like Facebook. But I mentioned what was the one account Tesla will go to is worth
Tesla
zero.
Worth zero.
Right. His account was suspended. It's not the first account that's been a suspended. But you've got accounts like Elon's, or understandably, obviously, the president of the United States, it's going to be tough to suspend the president's account because it's newsworthy and there are good reasons not to suspend it. But there are people with incredible amounts of power who are able to actually use their accounts to bully people and they don't get suspended.
Correct.
And whereas you've got these people that are fighting the Goliath and their accounts are getting suspended. What do you think that's about?
So I should be clear. I personally have had very little issue with Twitter. They've been very fair to me. One time my account was suspended, I believe I triggered a spamming algorithm because I was posting the same picture multiple times. And because of my own sort of doxing defense, my two-factor isn't my own phone, it's the phone of my friends and they were asleep. And so I couldn't get on my account for about 10, 12 hours. But once I did and they let me right back on. But there are accounts that have famously and most consistently, they're replying to Elon. Maybe they're a little edgy, certainly well within what you and I would consider First Amendment free speech. If not, maybe occasionally a bit distasteful. And there are excesses on both sides, don't get me wrong. But the people, just randomly, their accounts get nuked. They get suspended and they disappear with no recourse. That's probably happened to 4 or 5 relatively high-profile accounts. Elon Bachman, which is one of my favorite accounts, and I hope you don't mind, I'm going to drop some of the names of the famous Tesla Q accounts because they're my friends and I want to give them the notoriety they deserve.
And I've said to anyone who I'm going to have a mosaic, which I want to have available to my subscribers. So if you want, I assume many of you will be tweeting, retweeting, liking this episode. I will go through all of that and I'll actually ask TC to help me out on picking and choosing so that we can really put all those accounts on this rundown. But go ahead.
Elon Bachman is probably the funniest person in Tesla. He's a brilliant humorist, a real genius for the turn of phrase. Everyone sort of just organically arrives at their job. So sort of my job on Twitter is making charts and charting the data and showing the state of demand. Elon Bachman keeps this Tesla death list. And so Elon famously says, you know, Tesla's the safest car on the road. And the statistics, while arguable, I think tend to point to the exact opposite conclusion, which is there are a lot of fatalities in Teslas, both drivers, passengers, and then people in bicycles and pedestrians and so on. He keeps a spreadsheet of dozens of known fatalities and replied to one of Elon's tweet with the spreadsheet. And then suddenly his account was suspended. And then Tesla Q went into a movement where everyone changed their icon to Elon Bachman and really made a big stink. And ultimately, his account was unlocked. But I think this goes back. Jack Dorsey is on record as being very pro-Elon, thinks he's brilliant. His chair of the board thinks he uses Twitter wisely. And there's a suspicion that Twitter
is the chair of Twitter.
That's correct. I'm sorry, Jack.
No, no. The chair of Tesla is on record saying that.
Correct.
That's correct.
The chair of Tesla, Robin Denham, says Elon uses Twitter wisely. So everybody thinks it's great that Elon just goes on Twitter and does what he does, including apparently making fake buyout offers of his company in the middle of the trading day. That's wise. Others would call it securities fraud. The SEC certainly tried to. But
that's a whole other question of why the SEC has not pursued more vigorously these charges, or Elon, or some of the things he said are holding him accountable.
That's a great mystery of our time. I have some theories, but just to round out the Twitter, Jack Dorsey, there is deep suspicion within Tesla Q that if they could, they would censor us more. But every time they do that, they create 20 or 30 new accounts and bring more attention to this, and I think lend credibility to what was once, I think, you know, a bunch of nobodies on Twitter discussing Tesla, which is now becoming more and more mainstream, that, hey, there's a real issue here. There's something going on with this company that's not right. All these people didn't come to be critics of Tesla. There are much easier shorts. There are much easier things to do all day, but there's something deeply wrong here, and Tesla Q believes they know what it is.
Also, why would you or I or anyone else want to speak negatively about the first American car company in generations that has had a real shot at disrupting the automotive industry and also a revolution in battery cars, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, early on when I began covering this, I used to get a lot of hateful tweets about it, but I don't get those anymore. And that kind of brings me to another question, which I alluded to earlier, which is, it seems that Elon's tweets and his presence on social media is not having the same effect in terms of pumping the stock that it used to have.
Correct.
And that also translates into Autonomy Day and into his announcement about the creating an insurance company to sell insurance. But here's the thing. So this brings us to today, right? This brings us to the news, which has to do with Tesla's announcement that they're going to be issuing, or they're going to be raising over $2 billion worth of new capital through equity, right?
And convertible debt.
And convertible debt. So I think it's fair to assume that he wanted the stock higher before he did this. There's good reason to assume, I don't have any evidence for it, that Autonomy Day and some of these other promises were part of that. I mean, Elon has been obsessed with the stock price for years and years and years. This is what this is all about. What do you think, and I'm going to bring in our guest, I'm actually going to have him come in soon, but what do you think about this raise? What do you think this is about?
So I would say that the raise surprises me. I famously started a meme back in August, shortly after the 420 tweet, called Can't Raise, Can't Leave, which hypothesized that there was some deep disclosure prohibiting Elon from raising. And this was really born out of a curious absence of insider stock sales for a very long period of time, which then broke in sometime in like November and December, and we started to see them again. And so I guess it's not a total shock that they could raise. I'm very surprised that, for example, Goldman Sachs would be one of the underwriters of what's transpired today. So just to fill the audience in, it'll be old news, I guess, by the time this publishes. But they're raising $700 million in equity and probably $1.3-ish billion in a convertible note. For Goldman to be one of the underwriters after, I believe, Elon essentially lied to him on the conference call, the Q1 conference call. David Tamburino, the analyst from Goldman Sachs, asked him overtly about the demand situation in Europe and China, and Elon said everything's just fantastic, and then they turned in this terrible Q1 for deliveries. For Goldman to sort of be part of the syndicate after that performance on the call just surprises me, and I guess I shouldn't be. I would characterize what happened today as the barbershop quartet of all that is wrong with our current economy, which I know you've talked about different angles of on your podcast. It's this weird combination of Silicon Valley fraud, Wall Street corruption, regulatory capture, and then ZIRP absurdity. And let me take all four of those. So there's a lot of unicorns coming to the market right now from Silicon Valley that are cash burners, that have these huge valuations. I can tell you one thing. These founders and early investors are not bringing these things to market to make retail investors rich. They're bringing these things to market because they see the top and it's time to get out. Wall Street corruption, I talked about it. All of the underwriters on today's capital raise are also in their asset-backed line. And so they have a deep interest in making sure that Tesla survives this next leg, which is fine. I mean, it's just a little bit of a conflict. Regulatory capture. For the SEC to allow Elon to remain CEO after faking a takeover bid in the middle of the trading day on Twitter, totally disrupting the market, causing billions of dollars of potential legal liabilities for his company, and for sure hundreds of millions of dollars in losses for both bulls and bears. You know, if you were long Tesla and you owned call options at $430, that was a very bad tweet for you, and it crushed you. And for him to be able to then settle, go on 60 Minutes and call his shot and say he's never going to basically abide by this settlement, proceed to not abide by the settlement, be charged with contempt by the SEC for not abiding by the settlement, and then he makes a few tweaks to the agreement and gets away with it with barely a wrist slap, and then days after settling is just allowed to go tap the capital markets again like nothing happened, befuddles me. And then Zerp Absurdity, there wouldn't be any of this. We're in the, like, you know, Spiegel famously calls this the greatest bubble of our bubble generation, if there wasn't copious amounts of basically free capital needing to be put to work and banks readily accepting the fees with no due diligence, this wouldn't have happened. And so it's really a barbershop quartet of all that's wrong with our current economy. And I think that's why people are drawn to this story. It's just so absurd. If you or I had gone on Twitter and done that, we would be probably in prison.
So I want to ask the guest who has just newly joined us here to my left, Ed McCabe. Ed, we were just talking about, as you heard, we just started this. We were talking up until now about Tesla Q. It's great having you on, by the way. I love the haircut.
Thank you. Freshly done.
Freshly done. I love it.
I did it myself.
It looks fantastic.
Right.
So it's great having you here. Why don't you just jump in? I mean, this is we were talking up the beginning of the show discussing Tesla Q and this community and Tesla Charts' role in all of that. And now we're getting to the numbers, which is why I wanted to have you come on the program. What are your thoughts?
Well, I wasn't here for the part on Tesla Q.
No, not that part.
But I will say it's been remarkable.
Being part of that community.
Yes. The aggregation of so many intelligent people from so many different disciplines who were drawn to this because somewhere related to their discipline, it was offensive. Mm. From a capital markets, to me, it's offensive because I believe in the integrity of these markets. But there's guys from the auto side who see the safety issues related to it as an auto business that you find offensive. You know, there's engineers who find it offensive. And so we've all aggregated, and now we have this interdisciplinary group that's very hard to beat.
Well, TC made that point, too. That was actually his point at the beginning and corrected me, actually, which was that the experience of hearing Elon Musk talk about your specialty and then telling you that you're an idiot, essentially, is insulting.
Yeah.
And it's sort of what has been the unifying characteristic of this group.
Yeah, and there's a narrative that Elon helps write and is subscribed to by many that Tesla was targeted. Couldn't be further from the truth. I did not wake up one day and decide I don't like Tesla.
Right.
I had no reason to think that.
Right.
But we were all drawn to it because we saw what looked suspicious or offensive.
Among other red flags, of course.
So what do you guys think the significance is of today's news? Well, because they do have a cash problem. They've had a cash problem, right? This is the central problem for Elon.
They still have a cash problem.
Right.
I mean, they're going to raise, let's say, $2.2 billion. They're going to add $1.4 billion to an already over-leveraged company. They're doing that to fund a $1.6 billion working capital deficit. If I keep it nearer term, they've got a $566 million maturity due November 1st, and they have a $165 million term loan that they've rolled over several times now. So just take the term loan, the convertible due in November, that's like $725 million combined. Add it to your $1.6 billion net working capital deficit, and then consider that the company will burn free cash flow, I think, every quarter for the rest of the year. It does nothing. In fact, if I was an equity manager at a big place, whether it be T. Rowe, Fidelity, Putnam, Wellington, I would say to my analysts, what is going on here? This is an act of desperation. All we've done is funded their working capital, and we are at the bottom of the capital stack with $25 billion of on-balance sheet liabilities in front of us, $18 billion of purchase obligations in front of us, unquantifiable legal liabilities in front of us, under-reserved warranties in front of us. We've probably got $50 billion plus in front of us as an equity investor. What are we doing? he needs another raise. Are we doing that one too? That's what I'd be asking my analyst.
The thing that caught my eye today, and Ed has more experience in this than me, but the fact that, you know, they're only raising $700 million in equity, and they were reaching out to retail investors, Fidelity and a few other of the brokerage houses were not even like high net worth. Like if you had an account and they thought you might be interested in buying Tesla, they're reaching right out to you. It's literally a phenomenon on TeslaQ that we've nicknamed fun to baggy. So they're taking Tesla stock from funds and dumping them on retail because they know what's coming.
Because institutional investors are getting out of the stock.
Record speed, yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to see a good proxy for that fun to baggy phenomenon, you look at the Robinhood data. I mean, I think there was 80,000 account holders who held Tesla maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and now it's 140,000.
I saw that.
So as this stock has gotten destroyed, who's picking it up? You know, retail, largely millennial investors, and that's not to deride millennial investors. There's plenty of brilliant ones. But these are people who don't know a balance sheet, don't know a cash flow statement, and buy based on their affinity for the brand and their affinity for Musk.
What's that about, though? Is that any different from the X-gen phenomenon of the late 90s with the dot-com bubble? Is it different in any way?
Yeah, because I don't think investing in pets.com was virtue signaling in any way. So TC mentioned a lot of stuff. In particular, you know, the zero interest rate policy that we're in and the free liquidity that's all over the place. But I think what's different here, there's an affinity for this stock related to Musk, related to climate change. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of millennial investors who invest in what they like or what they use. So you can look at Robinhood and you can see the rankings of the most popular stocks, and they go from marijuana to Netflix to Tesla to Amazon, the things they like and use. I don't think they're owned for fundamental reasons.
And let me just build on that, the virtue signaling part, because I did something for my account almost as a sort of a gesture to the bulls. I actually bought a plug-in hybrid car. I bought a Chevy Volt. And I did it because actually I think the technology exists to solve the sort of point source emissions of transportation in a very economical way. And I think the Chevy Volt is a great engineering marvel, and so to show that I wasn't just, you know, the Koch brothers, big oil, you know, conspiring against this American manufacturing success story, I bought a good old American car that gets 50 miles of battery range, and I plug it in every night, and I rarely use gas. The virtual signaling part of this is really important because Elon has, and his enablers, and there are plenty enablers, have turned this into, if you don't buy Tesla stock, you hate the planet. And that's just absurd and offensive. Mm-hmm. To think that the only way to confront global warming, whatever you think of global warming, and there's a whole variety of opinions on it, the only way to do your part is to buy a Tesla and to own the stock.
Yeah, that's really stupid, though, because first of all, those batteries have to be, I mean, they,
full life
generate
cycle analysis.
Tremendous, yeah, tremendous amount of waste also, but also where's the energy coming from that's powering the battery? That's where we get into a question about global warming and fossil fuels. So that is totally ridiculous.
And where are you mining the raw materials that go into the battery?
Yeah, exactly. So, but I want to challenge you guys on this point about virtue signaling, because that might certainly exist in a very self-serving way, but yeah, I've seen the same phenomenon with marijuana stocks. And I've seen it also with cryptocurrencies. And I wonder if it's just part of a general lack of cynicism that comes from experience, and maybe that every generation has a cycle like this. It might be particular. There might be interesting nuances with the millennials. But that, simply put, they've never been through a cycle to learn any better.
They haven't paid their tuition yet.
They've never lost a significant amount of money betting on a stock, and Elon has delivered great returns for a lot of early investors and made a lot of people look very brilliant, right?
Yeah. He's the white hot, you know, gets all the clicks. The Q rating for Elon couldn't be higher. It's off the charts. And pardon the pun. And so I think people are drawn to this story because of what that represents. And so I do agree with you. There is certainly a part of the investor base that has never lived through a recession. I was an executive during the Great Recession of 2007 to basically, I would say, today. And so until you've seen your company stock depreciate by 85-90%, you don't know what's possible.
Right.
And if you've never seen that, but that's, I think, a small part of it. There's a whole sea of enablers as well out there that, because this is so white hot on both sides, people jump into it just to become notorious. And so the metaphor I would use is they become a very bright light in a room full of moths. And they, you know, Ross Gerber does, and he admits it basically on Real Vision. He said on Real Vision documentary, which I was part of, that he hardly has any Tesla stock, but it's great notoriety for him people give him their money to invest on their behalf because he's in Tesla and he's on TV all the time.
People should watch that. It was a fun documentary. Grant Williams did an amazing job, and Grant was in the car with Ross, and he did a beautiful job. And his production folks, whoever the camera folks were that were with him in LA, I suppose, is that where this is? I don't know where.
I assume so.
They did a great job of capturing Grant's discomfort in the car.
Yeah, that was good.
But I want to take actually a couple of quotes. I might take them separately. One is from Joe Rogan. It's from an episode he did yesterday. Joe Rogan famously had Elon Musk on the show, and he's spoken very positively about him. I enjoy watching Joe Rogan. I think he's a great contributor to the conversation. This is not a comment about Joe Rogan. It's actually, it's a subjective statement on my part because of what I think about Elon Musk, and Joe Rogan thinks very differently, but I think Joe Rogan captures, even though he's not a millennial, he captures the way in which so many people who haven't, let's say, dug in deeper have come to know or think about Elon Musk. This is literally a quote from the episode. He said, quote, "He's a silly super genius in all the best ways. I love the guy. I'm so glad he's alive. I am. I'm glad he's a real thing," end quote. Now, I actually read this to TC before we came in because I was so stunned by it, but there was something that stuck out in particular in that quote, which was, "I'm glad that he's a real thing." And I think that this is what Elon Musk's greatest talent is, his ability to erect this archetype of the great innovator, right? This Tony Starkian figure. And then he inhabits this figure. And for many people, he is, until you begin to dig deeper, he is the real thing, right? He is the real superhero genius inventor of our time. And it's so hard to disabuse yourself of that idea once you've come to believe it and once you've allowed it to infect you with possibility.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disavow yourself of that if you're not a critical thinker. I mean, if you're a critical thinker, you would probably look at the fact that PayPal likely would have failed if Peter Thiel didn't run him out. Tesla is insolvent. SpaceX probably needs to be restructured. And the Boring Company is an absolute joke. So you can call him a super genius and you're glad he's real. But what's real to me are the tangible results. And I don't measure tangible results in equity market cap.
But did you have an early view of Elon Musk before you began to delve into the stock that was more positive? I did.
I really only associate him with this stock. I mean, I've come to
know
that
is a meat and potatoes guy. He doesn't get the yeah. I'm not surprised that you didn't.
No, I didn't have anything against him. I just didn't follow him very closely. Right. So, yeah, I didn't have an opinion.
And let me augment something you said because I think it's important. You can be a critical thinker and think those things that Joe Rogan thought. It just means you haven't really looked at the underlying financials or the data or the facts. Mm-hmm. So I think you can be a critical thinker in general and have a superficial knowledge of Elon based on what he allows you to see. Mm-hmm. And you could be tricked into thinking that he is what Joe Rogan has described. Because I know I've listened to Joe Rogan. I enjoyed his podcast.
Yeah.
I very much enjoyed the one Elon was on. I remember when he smoked marijuana, Twitter broke.
Yeah.
It was about 2 o'clock in the morning and Eastern time and Twitter broke. But there are many critical thinkers. This is what we call the blue checkmark phenomenon. People that only have a superficial knowledge of Elon, then they wade into it and say, what is this Tesla Q and why are you picking on Elon? And this is a great company. They just don't know. I just think they're ignorant.
I just want to clarify. I wasn't speaking to Joe Rogan not being a critical thinker.
Yeah.
I'm saying in this instance, he's not thinking critically. There are things, I'm a critical thinker in narrow windows, and sometimes I don't think critically. So
correct.
I don't want that taken incorrectly.
Yeah.
I like Joe Rogan myself, as far as I can tell.
But it makes sense, though. Joe Rogan's not an electrical engineer
or a financial
technology
analyst.
Expert, and he comes to the conversation, obviously, thinking highly of Elon.
And that's
Elon.
His right.
Yeah, and also, you know, he's not cynical. So, but I think it's telling, right? There's another quote now I want to take from someone who I struggled to sort of describe her. Let's just say that I find her pronouncements and her positions, not just with Tesla, but in crypto and as a sort of investor at the cutting edge of technology, to be suspect. It's from Kathy Wood. She was on CNBC recently. But there's a particular part of what she said that I find telling, and I'll say why, and I want you guys to comment on it. She said, quote, "The analysts following this stock don't know how to analyze it. It's not a technology stock. It is that. It's not a car company. Yes, it is. Battery. It's a utility. It's something for everyone, and no one can pull it all together." So there are two parts of that that I want to focus on. One is that it's something for everyone. I mean, I think that that is the alarm bell that rings for all of us. And then the second part, which is no one can pull it all together. And I would say the irony there is that that's what Tesla Q has done. Mm-hmm. With this emergent phenomenon, Tesla Q has pulled it all together in a way that no single shop or individual or conspiracy could ever have done. I'm curious what you guys think of that quote and what I had to say.
Well, first thing that jumps out at me is she famously bragged, I think in the same interview, that she had four analysts covering Tesla. And
insane.
I would say there are 500 people who donated to Skibushka out of passion, which gives you some semblance of the size of Tesla Q.
Over $100,000 they raised, didn't they?
$115,000,
yeah. It's incredibly impressive.
500 people were so passionate about what happened to Skibushka that they opened their wallet. That tells you the size of the army, the self-correcting army of contributors, lurkers, people who only DM, and so on, that exist to study every aspect of Tesla. I must drive Elon nuts, and sometimes I feel bad because there's really nothing he can say, pronounce on, do that isn't scrutinized. You know, sometimes we get it wrong. There's no question about it, but it's self-correcting. When I first talked about can't raise, can't leave, I got a ton of feedback from Short saying that's naive and they will do it. And it clearly turns out 9 months later, after he ran the balance sheet into the ground and destroyed the brand, he has been able to pull off a raise, much to my surprise. So I was wrong on that, and I tweeted that today. I said, you know, I underestimated the willingness of the banks to take on all this liability, and others have as well. I think Gabe Hoffman was pretty a famous short seller who's who's been short the stock, was pretty loud and out there saying he didn't think that the investment banks would take this diligence risk either, but they did. And so here I am, I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I won't comment too much on ARK Investments and their research approach. I think it speaks for itself, frankly.
Right. Well, $4,000 price target, by the way, was hanging under the lower thirds on the video the entire time. That has been their price target for Tesla, $4,000.
It's absurd. But let's just say what she said is accurate. What you call it? It's part auto company, part utility company, part
battery company.
Technology.
Else?
Autonomy.
Okay, so what you just described.
AI.
If you want to take that rationale on its face, is either a conglomerate, which get terrible multiples, or we can just, you know, kind of average the multiples for an electric utility, an auto company, and a commodity battery company, and you will get a much lower stock price. So the rationale is flawed, and it's based in nothing reasonable.
Well, there was someone recently, I need to find it on my Twitter, because I had retweeted it out. Here it is. Paul Graham. He said, the old car companies, this is his tweet recently, I think he tweeted this out a couple days ago. The old car companies think what separates them from Tesla is that Teslas are electric, but they're also separated by the fact that Teslas are software, and that, they will discover, is an unbridgeable gulf. I just don't get these kind of ridiculous statements.
That's what I call
Tesla. Tesla is not software, and Tesla uses software like every other new car manufacturing company in the world.
Yeah.
This is not unique to Tesla, and in fact, I'm not an expert on this, but you guys can speak to this. As I understand it, they have absolutely nothing proprietary when it comes to autonomous, and generally, they're laggards technologically.
So that's what I call this a blue check mark phenomenon, where somebody with a superficial knowledge of Elon, and is probably a very critical thinker in other aspects of life,
right,
wades into this and just randomly says, Tesla is a software company. Well, let's find me a software company with, you know, negative margin and broken balance sheets and gross margins that have to be inflated by moving costs and probably capitalizing a bunch of stuff on the balance sheet. They're very aggressive in their accounting and they still lose money, probably close to $1 billion when you net out what's real from the last report, reported $700 million loss for the quarter. To believe Cathy Ark and people like Paul, who you just, Paul Graham, I believe his name you just quoted, you have to assume that Tesla will be a better auto manufacturer than Toyota, will be a better software programmer AI company than Google Waymo, will be a better chip maker than NVIDIA, will be a better insurance company than, you know, Geico.
It's something for everyone.
Something for everyone and nothing for anybody.
I mean, exactly.
It's absurd. And they spend almost no money on R&D, cut to the bone, compared to their peers in raw dollars. And it's just expected because Elon's this great innovator that he's going to outdo all of these people that spend billions of dollars that have armies of PhDs. And I guess if that's your bet, it's a free market and go buy the stock.
So, but there isn't an experience of driving one, especially back in the day when I first drove a Model S, I think it was in 2012. It was very futuristic, right? The experience of driving one was extremely futuristic. undoubtedly that had much to do with the battery and the lack of the engine and the sound of the engine, how quiet it was, the space of the car. But also there's that huge display screen. And we all see these videos of the car parking itself. Now, I don't know what other cars do that. Is it simply that Elon Musk is willing to take things that normally would be considered full beta and put them out there as actual, you know, safe technologies to use every day?
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely gone full beta, particularly with the claims of self-driving. I mean, the car is, I don't know, level two self-driving, maybe, which everybody else is. I mean,
driver's assist. Yeah.
Driver assist. You get it with every car. So there's nothing near self-driving. We've seen the deaths relative to the fleet or exceed any other car manufacturer. He massages the statistics right in a way that favors him. But yes, I think he's actually beta testing with people's lives, which is reprehensible.
So listen, guys, we're going to shift to the overtime. There are a lot of things that I want to discuss in detail. The service issues we've already covered in the show, but I want to discuss them a little bit more, Ed, because I went through your recent letter and I have a number of questions from it. I also am going to pull from Mark Spiegel's letter, which covers some of these things as well. For regular listeners, you know the drill. If you're new to the show, I don't take sponsorship money. I don't want to have to answer to anyone but my listeners, and I think breaking up these conversations with product pitches or service announcements takes away from the quality and substance of the program. I'm counting on the support of listeners like you to make the show possible, and I think the subscription offering I've put together is as good as you're going to find on any high-quality independent podcast, and that includes the overtime to this segment that we're going to do now with Tesla Charts and Ed, and you can get access to the transcript and to the rundown, and you can learn more about that at hiddenforces.io/subscribe or go directly to patreon.com/hiddenforces. So, okay, guys, let's head into the overtime.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And that was my episode with Tesla Charts. I want to thank Tesla Charts for being on my program. Today's episode of Hidden Forces was recorded at Creative Media Design Studio in New York City. For more information about this week's episode, or if you want easy access to related programming, visit our website at hiddenforces.io and subscribe to our free email list. If you want access to overtime segments, episode transcripts, and show rundowns full of links and detailed information related to each and every episode, check out our premium subscription available through the Hidden Forces website or through our Patreon page at patreon.com/hiddenforces. Today's episode was produced by me and edited by Stylianos Nikolaou. For more episodes, you can check out our website at hiddenforces.io. Join the conversation at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Hidden Forces Pod, or send me an email at dk@hiddenforces.io. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.